a good laugh as Mr. Hayden told how he explained to Jerry that they didn't believe in dating, but he wound up setting a time the next Tuesday to meet with the young man to talk to him. Chad's parents looked at each other, then explained that the reason they wanted to meet with the Haydens was because their son Chad felt like the Lord had spoken to him about Heidi. Though Chad didn't know it was going to happen, his dad gave Heidi's dad the journal that Chad had written. Also included in the journal were insights from Chad's brother and Chad's parents. The following Friday was the night that Mr. and Mrs. Hayden often left their children behind and went out together. With neither Heidi nor any of the other children knowing anything about what was going on, Mr. Hayden drove and met Chad, while Mrs. Hayden visited with Chad's mother and got to know her better. For 3.5 hours, Mr. Hayden discussed, as Chad put it, everything from what kind of toothpaste I used to what my greatest struggles were and my greatest victory. 3 times over 3 weeks, Chad and Mr. Hayden met and talked 4 hours. Heidi still knew nothing. Even her brothers didn't know. Mr. Hayden told me, I didn't want Heidi's heart to be turning toward an individual until I had evaluated him. It would have made it difficult for her to keep her heart from turning toward Chad prematurely if the parties involved had not first objectively evaluated the situation. Chad told me that he actually grew a little more distant to her outwardly during that time. Mr. Hayden said, my wife decided before me, and the journal helped convince her. It showed Chad's heart and showed that he was hearing from God. Another strong factor that influenced Mr. Hayden was the strong relationship he and his wife had with Chad's parents. On Saturday, 3 weeks after the first meeting with Chad, Mr. Hayden went on what he called a prayer walk. At that time, the Lord seemed to impress on his heart Psalm 34, verse 3. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt His name together. And the other verse was, I sought the Lord, and He heard me and delivered me from all my fears. Mr. Hayden took Heidi on a date that night, and after discussing with her, as they had done in the past, the importance of discerning the character of others, Dad said, Heidi, there's been a young man who's expressed an interest in starting a courtship with you. Heidi had overheard part of the conversation when Jerry had called 3 weeks earlier and figured out who it was on the phone and why he might be calling. Told her dad later, she immediately thought of Jerry and was ready to say no. Her dad continued, this young man is Chad Eaves. Heidi looked at her dad and said, Chad? Me? And began weeping. She was really quiet for a long time, and then she said, yes, I'd like that. When she got home that night, her mom greeted her with the question, did y'all have a good date? And Heidi threw her arms around her mom's neck and said, Mom, you knew this all along. Mr. Hayden called the Eaves that night and told them Heidi's decision. And Saturday night about midnight, Chad arrived home from work, and Chad's mom said, Chad, we need to talk. Chad told me he looked at his mom and said, oh no. She said no, didn't she? And Mom smiled and said no. Actually, she said yes. And Chad said, I hardly slept at all that night. The families agreed to meet at church on Sunday morning, 30 minutes earlier than usual, with the new couple in the center. Both sets of parents prayed for God's direction and blessing to be able to get started right. Then Chad and Heidi were given 30 minutes to just talk. The new couple sat together in church, and during the fellowship time, the pastor asked if anyone had a testimony to give, and both fathers came forward and formally announced the beginning of the relationship. Chad and Heidi stood up, and everyone applauded. Chad's dad clarified for me what was taking place from their perspective. He said, when Chad went into this, it wasn't to see if she was the one, it was she is the one. The purpose of this is marriage. Several weeks later, the families made a trip together, and Chad had purchased a diamond ring, wanted to formally ask Heidi to marry him. At Muskegon, Michigan, the couple walked out on a pier on Lake Michigan. Chad stepped over to a rock, coaxed Heidi over to the rock, formally proposed. Heidi said yes, and Chad gave her the ring. On November the 22nd, 1997, Chad and Heidi touched and kissed for the first time at the marriage altar. Now, I know you would agree with me that that was a beautiful story. And why was it beautiful? It was beautiful because it was biblical. As Chad and Heidi rode away from their wedding reception, one of the NBC crews said to Chad's dad, I've never seen anything like this in my life. Our last assignment was in Alaska. We were in a town where 70% of the town was infected with sexually transmitted diseases, and the epidemic was traced back to the high school. We came here from there, and here we see a biblical perspective. Mr. Hayden was telling me how they came to the decision to allow NBC to come in. He said, I knew this would bring a whole new level of pressure to bear on the whole situation, but we knew that God's goal through our family was to bring glory to Himself, and our goal as a family was to make God look good. When I explained to the family about letting NBC come in, I said, what is our goal as a family? And they all replied, to make God look good. So then I explained to the family, this was an opportunity for us to do that. A Christian professor, I first preached this I originally preached these thoughts back in the early 90s. This particular message with Chad and Heidi's story, I think, I preached around the year 2000. And I advertised it in the local newspaper at the time to invite people from all over our local area to come in. And a Christian professor at a secular college showed up that night. And he was talking to me about the message he had just heard me preach. He had seen the video on TV of Chad and Heidi. He had recorded it. And he told me this. He said, I use that video of Chad and Heidi in my college classes every semester. A silence begins to fall over the class while the video is playing. And when Chad and Heidi kiss, kids burst into tears. I have girls in tears who have lost their virtue. I have guys who are speechless. Young men look me in the eye and say, that's the way I want to get married. Every time I've shown it in a class, when the video stops, the response comes spontaneously and immediately. I'm saving myself for my husband. That's how I want to live and how I want to court. Now, why was Chad and Heidi's story so special that even the world sat up in amazement? Because they and their parents followed four key biblical pattern principles that everyone should consider in order to get safely and properly to the marriage altar. These are principles that will work for anyone, anywhere, in any culture, at any time in the history of the world. Because they are the principles designed by God and appointed by God to fit with this part of human life. I have shared these truths in Papua New Guinea, Guyana, South America, Uganda, Africa. They correct the problems wherever you share them. I gave a missionary who was headed to South Africa a few months ago, I gave him a flash drive with most of my messages on it, and I said, if you would like to have this, I'll give it to you, and you can just distribute it all over Africa. Just don't do it in the United States, only in Africa. He was very grateful, and he looked at me and he said, Brother Davis, he said, people come from the United States. They come to Africa, and they try to take what they teach in the United States about the dating thing, and they try to speak over there about it. And he said, the people have no idea what they are talking about at all. But he said, we can play your messages that come straight from the Bible approach, and whatever the problem we have, it will straighten out those problems. Have you noticed that there are certain key principles that will work with marriage, that will make anyone's marriage happier and more successful? Lost or saved people, either one, will have better, happier marriages, more likely to survive the storms of life, if they both will recognize that marriage is a covenant, not a contract. If the husband will live for his wife instead of himself. If the wife will joyfully submit to the husband's servant leadership, and if they will regularly and faithfully communicate about anything and everything that is going on in their lives. Those are universal principles that everyone ought to follow and that will work for anyone, because marriage was designed for mankind and not just for Christians. And the principles to get to the marriage altar are similar in the sense that they will work for anyone, because the principles, these principles were made by God to fit with the people that God Himself created. And when there are problems getting to the marriage altar, those problems can usually be traced to a violation of one or more of these four principles. In the last 2 months, I counseled with two different situations. And in both of those situations, these young people who it looked like were meant for each other, it looked like they were going to get married. Both couples had already talked about marriage, planned marriage. One of the couples had actually discussed in detail what was going to happen at her wedding and so on. And both of those relationships disintegrated. And I could see and pointed out to both couples, you violated this principle, you violated this principle, and this is why you had the problems. When there are problems in marriage itself, those problems can almost always be traced to a violation of the principles designed by God for marriage, or to the principles designed by God for getting to the marriage altar. When I was a pastor, I would counsel with a couple who were already married, but they were having problems. And it went back to the violation of principles before they got married, and that was creating problems in the marriage itself. Now, what are these four principles to make a wise choice for marriage? Number one is, in fact, I'm going to have you read this out loud off the screen with me. Would you please, everybody all together? Here we go. Number one, stay asleep or go to sleep in relation to the desire to have a mate or to get married. Now, we didn't do very good there. All right, can we do a little better? Can we try it one more time? Everybody read with me. Can you see it? Can you see it, or have I got it blocked off? Maybe I need to do this. All right, everybody read now. All right, I'm going to have you reading a lot the next 2 or 3 days, so I want you to get this down, okay? Number one, read it, everybody, please. Stay asleep
or go to sleep in relation to the desire to have a mate or to get married.
Oh, yeah, y'all are with it now. Okay, we got it. Now, there are two key pictures of Adam that are given to us by God before his marriage to Eve. The first picture is he very busy doing the work God gave him to do, which was naming all the animals. The second one is that Adam is asleep while God makes his wife and brings her to him. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept. So why did God put Adam to sleep? God could have easily performed surgery while Adam was awake and let Adam watch. The picture that God is giving us seems to be that He wants a man to go to sleep and let God bring him his mate. And God took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib, which Lord God had taken from man, made him a woman and brought her unto the man. While Adam slept, God prepared Eve. When Eve was ready, God brought her to Adam. So Eve was ready for Adam, and Adam was ready for Eve. If a man wakes up and finds out the lady isn't ready, then he needs to go back to sleep. Chad's father said to me, Chad was not looking for a wife. We were not looking for him. Now, if there's a problem in our day, it's probably more with youth waking up too early than waking up too late. My email newsletter, anybody here get my email newsletter? Does anybody get that? All right, I see. Okay. My email newsletter that I sent out 2 weeks ago today, I wrote on the subject of the vital importance of the when in relation to courtship. And I said, the knowing the when of courtship is more important than knowing the who of courtship. If you don't get the when right, it can mess up the who. You've got to be able to wait. You've got to be ready for marriage, or you're going to have problems even if you find the right lady. Now, in our culture, it's common for 7 to 15-year-olds to have boyfriends or girlfriends. That's the reason we have 12 and 13-year-olds getting pregnant. And as the world drops the age, Christians do as well. Young people also need to flee youthful lust and be busy serving God in order to be able to wait. Israel and Brooke Wayne were married in 1999, and Israel said that he wasn't just asleep. He said, Brother Davis, I was comatose. He said the key to him staying asleep was his totally committing the whole matter to the Lord and asking God to prearrange his marriage when he was ready. So a young man should go completely to sleep in this area of life and wait on God to wake him up sometime after he is truly ready to take a wife. He should be busily occupied serving God and others, recognizing that God is well able to bring the right lady across his path when God is ready to do so. He should be ready in relation to his own character, maturity, training, leadership abilities, and capability to provide for a wife and family. God brought Eve to Adam, and there is a sense in which God brought Rebecca to Isaac and Ruth to Boaz. And I have a whole message on the table entitled Ruth and Boaz, a Biblical Love Story. A young lady should do nothing to seek, but should instead wait to be sought. 1 Timothy 2:9 talks about a lady being shamefaced, meaning that she would be embarrassed to be forward or flirty with a man. This allows a young lady to focus on the development of her own character instead of focusing on who might be the one. Now, this principle of going to sleep is not only supported by example and direct statement from the Scriptures. The silence of the Scriptures is also a powerful argument here. I'm referring to the almost complete absence of anything like dating around in the Bible. Have you ever noticed that? Read it, everybody, please. Biblical relationships were for the purpose of marriage. That's why there's almost a total absence of temporary romantic relationships. I said almost. In Genesis 34, Shechem fell in love with Jacob's daughter Dinah. Shechem defiled her, then wanted to marry her, and Dinah's brothers angrily deceived Hamor and Shechem, then murdered them and all the men of the city. Sounds similar to some of the results of dating around in our day, doesn't it? Lots of the high school shootings that have taken place for the last 10 to 15 years have been because of problems in romantic relationships. There's also the story of Samson being romantically interested in a Philistine woman in Judges 14. And that was the very beginning of Samson's slide toward destruction. Of course, the ideal picture of how to get to the marriage altar is salvation itself. And part of that picture is that Jesus waited until the time appointed of the Father to seek His bride. He also does not seek a temporary relationship with us. He seeks from us a definite commitment that results in eternal salvation. This principle also produces emotional purity, which is itself the only solid foundation and support for physical purity. Number two, read it with me, everybody, please. Real clear and loud now. Everybody read. Wake up with the
leadership of God-given authority.
Good, thank you. One of the key elements that made Chad and Heidi's story so beautiful was the love and loyalty they displayed toward their parents. In fact, part of the power and impact of the story was in the way that Chad went first to his father, not to Heidi, not even to Heidi's father. That was a simple but powerful demonstration of Ephesians 6 that says, honor thy father and thy mother that it may be well with thee. In Genesis 2, God made Eve and brought her to Adam. When you see a wedding, And a father brings the bride down the aisle. By the way, that's my bride right there. And that was 51 and a half years ago. She's still the prettiest bride there has ever been in history. When a father brings the bride down, my father-in-law, he's 90 years old now. And he lives with us. We have a great time. When the father brings the bride down the aisle and he gives her away, that picture is drawn from this passage as God, like a father, brought Eve to Adam. Incidentally, the young man is not given away. He is released to marry and takes a wife. And that is right at the front. I played the trumpet. And you know that, ta-da-da-da-da-da-da. Everybody had stood up, looked around, saw my wife coming in, she was about to be my wife, coming down the aisle. And when they all looked that way, then I took my trumpet and blasted, ta-da-da-da-da-da-da, and the whole crowd went just like that. Anyway, a young man is released to marry and takes a wife. When a man hath taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war, neither shall he be charged with any business, but he shall be free at home 1 year and shall cheer up his wife, which he hath taken. And I tell people what's happening there is that when she finds out what she got, he needs to be there real bad to cheer her up. So, something like that anyway. But anyone of any age needs the help of godly authority figures when getting married, which is easily one of the biggest decisions of human life. I remember this young man coming to me and saying, "Pastor, can you help me? I don't have a dad to help, and Mom told me to come and talk to you." And it was a joy for me to help him get to the marriage altar. And I think he and his bride now have 9 children, I think was what the last count was. In Genesis 24, Isaac was probably 40 years old, yet Abraham took the lead helping Isaac find his bride. Genesis 26 shows us Esau, a carnal man, seeking a wife by himself, and those that he found were a grief of mind to his parents. It's like God is saying to us early in the Scriptures, if children don't have their parents' leadership, then they're going to bring heartbreak to their parents' lives. Matthew 22, Jesus said, "The kingdom of heaven is like unto a certain king which made a marriage for his son." Notice the king as a father leading in relation to this. Incidentally, the truths in this message tend not to work with parents who practice dictatorial leadership instead of servant leadership. I will go into detail on that on Monday night's message. But dictatorial parents tend to want to choose their children's mates for them and tend to not listen to their children or give scriptural or spiritual reasons for the decisions that they make. Now, what does this second principle do that young men and women need? First of all, it allows someone to be in leadership who can think more clearly. And secondly, it protects and directs the simplicity of youth with the wisdom of years. The third key principle to make a wise choice for marriage, read it with me off the screen, please, everybody. Make a possible to avoid defrauding. Now, God may point out a certain young lady to the young man himself. Or God may point her out through his dad, mom, or other authority figure. Hopefully, by this time, the young man will already know the young lady, but may not have considered that she might be his wife. If he doesn't already know her, then he should communicate with his dad and seek a way for their families to be around each other so as to get to know her without her knowing of his interest in her. The young man, or his dad, or both of them, would be wise to ask their pastor for his insights, as the pastor may know something that would cause them to either stop or to continue in the direction they're headed. A pastor may have counsel, ideas, warnings, or direction for them that they could not get anywhere else. Jeremiah 31 or 3:15 says, I give you pastors which shall feed you with knowledge and understanding. If God continues to direct, the next person to contact would be the girl's father. If he wants to know more about the young man, then he may ask whatever questions he wishes to ask. Wise questions at this point may help to reveal any incompatibilities or hypocrisies in either the young man or the young lady's life. By the way, on our website, in the free download section, is a long list of questions, several pages of questions that a father can ask a young man, and then later the young lady can ask the young man. And you wouldn't have to use all of those, but it would at least be a starting point for you. The greatest deterrent to hypocrisy is the genuine commitment to Christ of both young people. The girl's dad may then talk to his daughter without the young man, knowing he has done so. And in that way, if the answer is no, the young man never has to know whether the no came from the girl or the dad. The key thing that all parties need to be asking is the question, is this the will of God? In every other decision of human life, we recognize that emotion should not be the determining factor. Now, I didn't say emotions are all bad. Emotions are wonderful. Life would be dull without them. But they can be extremely deceitful, and I explained that in my message, God's Way to Deal with Your Wrong Emotions. How many people are deceived by feelings and then mess up their lives because they follow those feelings? Psalm 53:5. So that you can have the emotion of fear when there's no reason to be afraid. You can also be fearless when you ought to have a healthy, godly fear. A lady told me about her parents. I was actually speaking at the Denver Homeschool Convention several years ago now. And a lady told me how her parents tried to warn her sister not to marry a certain guy. But the sister fearlessly married him anyway. After she married him, she found out that he was a serial killer. Had murdered several people. The lady, he was arrested and taken to prison for the rest of his life. That lady should have been afraid to marry that man, but she wasn't. Now, the number one concern for most people about marriage is whether or not the couple is in love. I am for a couple, quote, being in love. But both the Bible and human life all around us testify that, quote, being in love is not a valid reason to get married. It's also a poor reason to establish a relationship that would lead to marriage. So many have felt the emotion of love for someone whom they should not love. And since they married because of falling into love, it was easy for them to divorce because of falling out of love. Falling in love sounds like somebody accidentally doing something like falling down the stairs or something. You know what I mean? Samson had told Delilah that he loved her. Wait a minute. Delilah was a Philistine and a harlot, and Samson was a judge of Israel. Shechem was in love with Dinah. Potiphar's wife was in love with Joseph. Amnon was in love with his own half-sister Tamar. Your soul is your mind, your will, and your emotions. And proper decision-making is made by putting the mind under the command of Christ. Let the mind tell the will what to do, and the emotions will either immediately or eventually joyfully follow. Emotions must never be in first place in making key decisions of life. Does that mean that anyone who's ever made a decision where emotions were in the lead made a wrong decision? No. However, if emotions are leading the way, even if a decision is a truly wise decision, there'll almost always be some negative consequences that result. Moses struck the rock in anger. God still gave water, but Moses' disobedience cost him his life. I can testify that God was gracious and gave me the right one, even though emotions were leading the way. But my wife and I had problems in our marriage, especially the first few years of my marriage, as a result. If a young man learns to discern the voice of God in this key area of life, it prepares him well to discern God's voice in other decisions for the rest of his life. The reason Chad's father had him journalize his thoughts was he wanted to know that Chad was hearing from God. He wanted to make sure the mind was leading to the decision and the mind was under the command of Christ. Did you notice that Chad and Heidi fell in love after the decision to marry took place? There was no dating, no courting, as some would call it. Many young people have gotten to know one another in totally neutral, normal settings as far as romance is concerned. Then with the guidance of authority figures, those couples have determined they were God's will for each other's lives and headed to the marriage altar. Remember my key point here. Make a wise decision as much as possible from apart from emotion as possible to avoid defrauding. Because it is a negative command, perhaps the most important command in the Bible in relation to getting to the marriage altar, is 1 Thessalonians 4:6. I'm paraphrasing the two verses before it. Paul says, you need to know how to get your wife in a holy way instead of an unholy way, and don't follow your passions like the heathen do. Then verse 6 says that no man go beyond, it means transgress, and defraud his brother, it means any fellow believer, in any manner, because that the Lord is the avenger of all such, as we also have forewarned you and testified. What is defrauding? It is when you raise expectations and then cheat someone instead of doing what you indicated you were going to do. We had a widow lady in our church in Illinois who had problems with her roof. A man told her he was going to fix it. She paid him. He banged around, left town, and the roof leaked worse than it did when he started. She was defrauding. In romantic relationships, defrauding takes place all the time, and people act like it's just normal human life. What do I mean? A young man will show interest in a young lady, raise her expectations of marriage, and then just walk away and try to act like nothing ever happened. But God's commands in this area must not be taken lightly. We must do our best to develop relationships in such a way that defrauding does not take place. Someone told me that late spring in the Bible college she attended was known as Kleenex season. I said, Kleenex season? She said, yeah. The girls in the dorms were crying because the romances that started back in September and October were being broken off. You remember that Chad said that he actually, by the way, I know of at least two colleges where they start the year off. Blessed Hope Baptist College in Benton, Arkansas, and Master's Baptist College in Fargo, North Dakota. And I talked about both of them in my newsletter earlier, 2 weeks ago. And both of those start the year off by one of the provost of Master's Baptist College. I was there about 6 weeks ago, and he was saying to me, Brother Davis, you can see the young people right away, the first week of college. And he said, they're sizing each other up. They're looking at them. And he said that one of the very first things we do, the first 2 weeks, is we talk to them about these issues. They actually play three of my DVDs, this one and Essential Principles and Avoiding Defrauding in Relationships. He said, we play those three DVDs, and then he teaches about what proper relationships are in relation to everybody around you, that there's a relationship you can have with anybody, anywhere, but then there are certain relationships that are saved for different areas. Now, you remember that Chad said he actually grew a little more distant to Heidi outwardly during the time he was meeting with her dad. He was trying to make sure that he did not defraud her in any way. The best way for young people and parents to get to know one another is not in any type of romantic setting, but rather in the setting of everyday life where people are just being themselves. Now, until we truly establish these principles as part of our lives, our churches, our culture, we face a balancing act between getting to know somebody better on the one hand and not defrauding on the other hand. But we desperately need to learn that balance. And no, we don't want to become critical of those who try to do right and fail. Now, let's give all four of these principles. Read these off the screen with me, and then I'll give you the fourth one, and we'll wind this message all up, all right? Number one is stay to the desire to have a mate or to get married. Number two, wake up with the
leadership of God-given authority.
Number three, possible to avoid defrauding. And number four, establish a secure relationship that includes physical purity and the winning of the lady's heart. Once the will of God is determined, the youth and their parents should agree to move toward marriage. If this relationship is no more than a temporary romantic trial relationship, then we're right back to the worldly concept of dating around. Many people do that and call it courting. I wonder if a better term to describe it would be a combination of dating and courting. They're really just dorting. That's what they're doing. Paul referred to that type of activity as doing things like the Gentiles which know not God. Earlier I mentioned that NBC received only a couple of complaints about Chad and Heidi's story, and the producer said that one of those complaints came from the Jewish community. The representative from the Jewish community said to NBC, "Why didn't you come to us for a testimony? We have been doing this since time began." Wow. Joseph was not dating Mary. They were definitely planning to get married. The father of the bride should tell the young man what he expects him to do in relation to his daughter from this point to the marriage altar. Whatever the dad requires, the young man should not only decide he will fulfill, but he will, if possible, exceed the father's expectations. But the father must not change his mind later and expect more than he states at the beginning of the relationship. If he does so, then he's defrauding the young man. We dealt with a situation where a dad had given his permission for marriage, then came back later and told the young man that he needed to have a house paid for before he could marry his daughter. Now, having a debt-free house is a wonderful thing. But Dad, if you're going to require that, tell the young man the first time he talks to you, don't tell him later on. And then he's sitting back saying, "How many years is it going to take to do that?" And he and she both are just sitting back like, "How in the world are we ever going to get married now?" Not only is it possible for young people to defraud one another, it's also possible for parents to defraud their own sons and daughters by giving permission for marriage, then trying to withdraw it or threatening to withdraw it. If parents are going to change their minds, it should be before this, not after this. If the couple is not truly ready for marriage, then don't let them get to this point. Parents at this stage become not controllers, but facilitators of the relationship. Except for two things. A couple should now be allowed to form their own decision-making entity and plan their lives together. And the two things parents should continue to do are share counsel and give protection from the weaknesses of the flesh. A couple deciding to not be alone together simply helps them to fulfill the scriptural principle to stay away from the presence of temptation. This is December of 2007, and my daughter Gina is on the screen there on the right. She was almost 30 years of age. She was the one of my four girls who had hoped to be married at 18 and wanted to have 10 kids by 30 years of age. It just didn't work out that way. And she and Glenn, she was actually ministering and spiritually to Glenn's sister when Glenn noticed her and eventually talked to his dad, then came and talked to me about whether he and she could have a relationship. And this was the day that we announced to the church their relationship, and this is their wedding picture. But it was interesting what happened. My daughter said to me, "Dad, I'm interested in him, but I've seen too many." But she, if you call her 800 number, Jean is still the one for 25 years. She's been the one who answers our 800 number. And she said, "I've talked to too many wives who are having problems with their husbands." And she said, "I know it could happen to me as well. And if you say no, I will walk away. It will be fine." There was already some attraction there, but it was still very much in control at that point. We went out to eat with him and talked to Kim and asked him a whole list of questions. Then we took them, my wife and I took the two of them out to eat and let them sit on one side of the restaurant while we sat on the other side of the restaurant. And my daughter Gina had this long list of questions for him. And that list of questions, along with many others, are also available as a free download on our website. At one point, I walked over and took a picture of them and talked to them for a little bit. And I said, "You thought our list of questions was something, didn't you?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Her list is something. It's even more than our list." He said, "Yes, it is. It really is." And she had this list of questions. She wanted to know what it was. After they were married, a few months after they were married, they run upon a little bump in the road in their relationship. And he said that this was what they were going to do. And she said, "Do you remember at the restaurant that night I asked you that question? And what you told me was this. And all I want to know is, are you going to keep your word or are you going to change things now?" And he said, "You're right. And I should keep my word, so I will." And of course, they had a beautiful wedding, and we've got lots of pictures, and I won't take time to share all of that. So the couple should be able to move toward the marriage altar with the two sets of parents showing deference toward each other and toward the new character, toward the new couple. Parents who are lacking in the character quality of deference, which is the yielding of rights, tend to be the ones who have the most problems leading their children to the marriage altar. Chad told me, "Neither of our parents ever threatened the relationship. He said that he and Heidi never broke up and never even talked about it. A key thing the father of the lady should say to the man is that he expects him to seek to win his daughter's heart. Since the dad and mom know their daughter better than anyone else, they may be able to make suggestions concerning how the man may best do this." According to 2 Samuel 15, three ways to win someone's heart is by listening, talking, and touching. But I believe 1 Corinthians 7 teaches there should be no special physical touches between a man and a woman until marriage, and the listening and talking will tend to produce spiritual and emotional unity. Chad and Heidi never touched or kissed each other or anyone else until they got to the marriage altar. A relationship like this should probably not be extended over a long period of time. Heidi's dad said, "The Lord impressed on my heart that a short courtship was in order. We began right away working toward marriage, and the relationship began in June. They were married in November. Chad said just a little longer might have been better." I know of no specific length of time spelled out in Scripture. Jewish custom was 1 year, and the purpose of the year was to establish clearly that the girl was a virgin and that no baby was on the way. I would never counsel any couple to extend a relationship past a year. In fact, I would strongly counsel against that. According to Deuteronomy 24:5, the first year of marriage is itself a time of adjustment and preparation. And a year from the beginning of a commitment up to marriage is a time of adjustment and preparation for marriage. The year is not necessary but sufficient. Much longer than a year could be more like serving a sentence than it is adjusting, and could expose the young person to unnecessary temptations. But the Bible tells us, hope deferred makes the heart sick. Now, the hearts of those about to marry are supposed to be drawn to each other, not being made sick by being apart too long. A parent who doesn't feel his child is ready to be married in a year or less should not allow his son or daughter to begin a relationship. You remember that when God woke Adam up, it was time to get married. My observation is that this is also an area where some parents knowingly or unknowingly defraud their children. When Laban required Jacob to work 7 years to marry Rachel, it was because Laban had a hidden agenda. And imagine the shock to Jacob when he wound up with Leah instead of Rachel. Incidentally, there are two biblical words that describe this secure relationship in which courtship should take place. And the words are consistent in their meaning of a relationship established before marriage. And those are the words betrothal or espousal. Now, you may believe that betrothal is either an example, a pattern, or a description. Most people would at least believe it's an example. I believe it's like a pattern. And I'm skipping over some of this right here. Both Chad and Heidi's fathers said to me that they would refer to Chad and Heidi's courtship as taking place in the biblical framework of betrothal. But it's very important that you realize that using the term, if you choose, I hardly ever publicly use the term betrothal anymore. It's because for some reason, I like the term because it's biblical. It's a biblical terminology, and I don't know how you can ever improve on what God says about anything. But so many people in our day think that if you use that word, then it's referring to an arranged marriage, and I'm very much against arranged marriage. One of the things Heidi's dad told me that he said to Chad in the 3 weeks he was talking to him before the relationship was established was, this is not an arranged marriage. If Heidi has a caution in her heart, I will not force a situation to happen. I wouldn't say there is anything such as a perfect courtship any more than there's anything such as a perfect marriage. But there are marriages that are exemplary marriages because the couple are living out God's principles for marriage. And there are courtships that are exemplary because the couple humbly lived out God's principles before they were married. Now, here are the four principles in an abbreviated form. Read it off the screen, would you please? Number one is go to sleep. Number two is wake up with leadership. Number three is wisely decide. Number four is establish the relationship. Incidentally, you might notice that these principles are key principles of life for all young men and women, even apart from the matter of getting to the marriage altar. They could be stated like this. Number one, focus on serving God. Number two, follow the leadership of authorities. Number three, make decisions apart from emotion and don't defraud people. And number four, be careful to whom you give your heart. Now, of course, the testimonies that arrive out of following these principles will be as diverse as life itself, because God is a God of infinite variety. Jared DePoppy had come to be my apprentice in May of 1999. He and I spent lots of time together as I was personally training him for the ministry. And in April of 2001, he went home to Wisconsin for Easter. On Easter Sunday afternoon, with Jared driving back to Illinois for our Sunday evening service, his dad called me on the telephone and said this, 3 years ago, I asked if you would consider Jared for your apprentice. Today, I'm calling to ask if you would consider your daughter Joanna for Jared." I was shocked. I knew they had been around each other and become friends, but I never saw anything other than that. And my first thought, honestly, was that I needed to listen to some CD so I would know what to do next. That's the truth. I had to stop, step back, think about the principles that I had learned and taught, and figure out what to do next. I called my wife and said to her, "Honey, I've got this telephone call." And she said, "Honey, you need to talk to Jared and set his mind at ease." I said, "What for?" "He wants my daughter. Let him sweat." Relax. I was nice. I really was. I told him and that his dad had called and that we were honored that he had called, and I would get back to him in the next couple of days. On Wednesday, we took Jared to a restaurant for lunch. And after we ate, we set a camera in front of him and asked him lots of questions, including why he felt Joanna was God's will for his life. My wife and I talked about it, prayed about it, decided it was really a possibility, and that we should ask Joanna. We had the girls clean the house and prepare a meal, but didn't tell them who was coming, simply that company might be coming for supper. Then we sat Joanna down and turned on the video of Jared telling why he felt Joanna was God's choice for his life. I looked at Joanna and said, "You know we do not believe in arranged marriage. You can say anything you want to say. You can say yes. You can say no. You can say I want to pray about it. You can say I want to think about it. You can say I need to get to know him better." And she looked at me and said, "Do I have to wait? I already know that he is the one." We found out later that the two of them had fasted and prayed about each other weekly on the very same day of the week, and neither one of them knew that the other one was doing it. We had guessed that Joanna would say yes, and we had invited Jared's parents to come down from Wisconsin. So Jared and his folks came to the house for dinner, and we gave them our blessing to enter what we call the betrothal relationship. A wedding date was eventually set for January 11th of 2002. But there was a problem. To me, it was a big problem. December arrived, and Jared was in love with Joanna. But Joanna had fears about marrying Jared. I called up a wise friend and said, "Give me some advice. Do we postpone the wedding and give her more time, or do we continue to move forward?" And he said, "Does everybody still feel like this is God's will?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Then I don't know why you should wait." January 11, 2002, after a 9-month betrothal, I stood at the back of our church auditorium with my daughter on my arm, and I honestly don't know that I have ever seen anyone more in love than she was that night when I walked her down the aisle. They had one of the most beautiful weddings that you have ever seen. Joanna was our daughter who had lots of fears growing up. By the way, that's Joanna when she went on her first date with Daddy as a little girl. I think she was just afraid of the thought of the reality of a lifelong commitment. And they now have two children and are a great delight to our lives. I actually ate dinner at their house on Monday night of this week. And Bree just, the girl there, she just turned 14. Jared is the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Gillespie, Illinois, and the chief of police in the same town. We joke and say that he gets them either coming or going. I asked them a while back. Actually, I didn't ask them. They volunteered this. They said to me, Joanna said to me, "Dad, what you teach and had Jared and I do was exactly what we want to do with Bree and Locke. He said, "We cannot imagine doing anything differently. It was wonderful. And we think it was the right thing to do." In Matthew 5, Jesus said that you're the light of the world, and a city set on a hill cannot be hid. Do you know that the city of Jerusalem sits on a hill? And did you know that God wants His people to be like a bright city sitting on a hill? Jesus continued, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." NBC probably shot 10 hours of film to produce a 12-minute documentary. An hour and a half into an interview with Heidi's parents, the cameraman stepped out from behind the camera and said, "Hold it. I have two 11-year-old twin daughters at home, and what you're saying makes a lot of sense. I need to ask you some questions." And then he personally talked to them for 30 minutes. Here they are a few years ago. I've not heard from them actually for many years now. I ask Israel Wayne the question, "If you could speak to Christians everywhere about what you did, what would you say?" And he replied, "I would say, don't pattern your relationship after us. Instead, seek God's perfect plan for your relationship. He has wonderful plans for you, and He will write a beautiful love story for you if you will hand Him the pen and stop trying to write your own script. It can be wonderful if you will just follow God's plan for finding a mate instead of what the world all around us is trying to do all the time." Pastor, I was just thinking, I'm done. I'm ready to pray and give it to you, but I could just see if anybody has any questions. You want me to do that? All right. This has been a lot of teaching tonight, covered a lot of ground, and I know that your pastor teaches on these principles as well. And you know what amazes me? I'm hardly ever asked to preach this message. I have not given this message for almost 4 years anywhere. The videos go out, but I've actually given this message... I gave it in 2014 at the Colorado Homeschool Convention. I gave it at a church in Canada 2015. I gave it at a couples retreat in 2017, and I'm giving it here tonight. So, but I want to tell you, I'm watching so many couples mess up their lives because they're not doing things God's way. So, anybody have a question? If not, I'm going to pray and just give it to your pastor. Boy, y'all listened well tonight. Thank you. I went for over an hour there, and I was thinking several times that if you started, you can sense your crowd, you know? And I thought if they start retreating from me, I'll start leaving stuff out and finish up quicker. So, but you stayed right with me, and I appreciate it. Anybody have a question? Yes, sir. On my... I really don't get it. I've done everything everybody...